actually really a call out to that urban sprawl, prosperity gospel, mega church that brings people in and takes their money and offers them nothing. And that's really what I'm talking about.
That's Sarah Morgan. I'm Jamie Green. And this is Trading Fours.
I'm going to Kansas City.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another edition of Trading Fours. I hope you're doing well. We have made it through yet another week. We're getting into late June, almost into July. And really happy to tell you that we've got a Kansas City artist this week. We're back in Kansas City. The amazing Sarah Morgan came by the house to talk all about her new album called Another Nail that is out. Wherever you get your music, you can find it. It's fabulous. I've gotten to listen to it several times and really dug it. She's an amazing songwriter, singer. And we had a really good time when she came over and chatted about the new album. We chatted about her childhood, both here in Kansas City at Olathe, and then also earlier on in Arkansas. And we talked about, as she becomes a bigger name, how she deals with that. So I think you're going to really dig this interview. She was great, very forthcoming, and I really enjoyed it. So let's get started. Here's my conversation with Sarah Morgan. I think a good place to start is that I, you know, Go-Go Ray is a friend, mm-hmm. And he spoke very highly of you, and I'm always really interested in the community of Kansas City. So what, as a musician, do you like about being based in Kansas City musically?
Musically, as in the scene around, yeah, or like the, just location-wise?
I'm thinking like the people you get to play with, the venues you get to play in.
I think Kansas City is a really well-kept secret musically, because everybody has to come through here. So if you're looking to make a particular connection, there's probably 5 to 10 people who know everybody who actually works the industry. I've found that I don't really have to go anywhere else to meet people, because if I do my job and do it well long enough, somebody in Kansas City is going to introduce me to somebody. And that's been one of the reasons I've stayed. It's just been actually a lot less work. Not that I don't enjoy working hard,
right.
But the community here is smaller, and it makes it a bit more tight-knit, you know. Mm-hmm. The people who have been on my side since I got here are still very much on my side, and I'm incredibly grateful for that loyalty. So
yeah, I always say Kansas City is the biggest small town on the planet, right?
It is. After all my travels over the last couple of years, I'm like, it really is. It's the small town of big cities.
It really is. And it's just one of those things. So I've been here since 94.
Mm-hmm.
My wife is a native, and her family, I think she's like fourth generation Kansas Cityan. Like, they've been here forever.
Yeah.
And a big Irish Catholic on one side, every stereotype. The cops, you know, and and then on the other side, she's half Lithuanian, and that's mm-hmm. the KCK, you know, immigrant thing.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's just really interesting. I can't go anywhere without running into somebody.
That's fascinating.
Right? Like,
yeah.
So I'm glad I don't have like a gambling problem or a cocaine habit or something like that. I'd be found out.
It's okay.
Almost immediately. Anyway, so that's cool. Yeah, I just, you know, I was thinking about this because I was watching your videos and stuff and saw that you did it with Knuckleheads, and I always try to explain. I have people come from out of town, and I'm like, no, I have to show you how to get there, because it's like such a weird location.
It is a weird location.
It's just strange, but it's such a cool venue. And anyway, so I find that interesting. And I'm also really fascinated about your everything I've seen, every interview you've done. You always talk about your coming up from Arkansas.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, why is that? So, and the reason why I ask that is my mom was from Texarkana on the Texas side. But she's been here forever, but she still has that kind of like some things that she feels home about, even though she hasn't lived there since 1955, something crazy.
Yeah.
What about it draws you to that? What makes you still connect with it?
Well, we didn't move till I was almost 11, and all my family lives there, you know, so I lived in Kansas City for about 7 years, graduated high school, went back to Arkansas for college. I stayed in Northwest Arkansas for 7 years, and again, my family's there, but there's something about your formative years, whatever soil you're walking on at that particular time. I feel like I just have a connection to it, and And I don't know, there's no place like home. There's really not. You know, I enjoy it. And it was really picturesque. You know, I was raised down the street from my grandparents. It was just, you know, there were a few houses down. I walked down. I don't know. I enjoy it.
Well, I mean, that's a much better experience than saying, God, I hated it. I couldn't wait to get out of there, right?
No, I loved it. Since I moved at the age I did, that's probably what allows me to romanticize that particular place. And I'm very aware of that. I talked to both my parents about that quite a bit. And I'm glad for that, though.
Right.
I'm glad that if we were going to move, we moved right at the time that we did, not earlier or later, because I would have had too much of an education on the downsides of that particular place, which there are plenty of pros. But I just believe in watering the best part of your roots.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. So let's back up then. So the family musical?
I mean, my grandma plays the organ. My dad is one heck of a singer, despite having smoked cigarettes his entire life.
Right.
Like, chain smoked cigarettes. He's got a beautiful voice. And my mom is classically trained on the piano. You know, she cannot play for years and sit down with a book and just do whatever is there. And there's plenty of music in the family.
Well, you know, that's interesting because that's one of the biggest threads. So you're going to be probably episode 72.
Yeah.
Almost everybody comes from a musical family.
Yeah.
Not everybody. There's a few exceptions, but almost everybody does. And it's interesting how it's kind of like athletics, right? Like, you know, well, Patrick Mahomes, since we're here in Kansas City, you know, his dad was a Major League Baseball player.
Yeah.
Like that kind of stuff runs in families too. And I don't know, is it because you're exposed to it constantly, or is it something you think in the genetics?
I don't know if it's genetic. I think it's something that you're exposed to. I mean, both my parents loved Boston, and I'm obsessed with that band. Like, that debut record, if I had to take one thing on an island with me, that's what I would take. And I think it's because I have an emotional attachment to the exposure of it during a particular vacation drive as a kid. So I think it's just more exposure.
That's funny, because you wouldn't even been alive when Boston was an active band.
No. I would love to meet Tom, though. That's like my dream.
Well,
meet.
maybe you'll hear the podcast. That I actually saw them.
Yeah. Oh, my parents tell me about that all the time. I'm like, man, be quiet.
Every generation
does. It's not fair.
Stuff. Every generation does. If it makes you feel better. I worked in a record store in college in the 80s, and I had a Jimi Hendrix t-shirt on.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy was like, yeah, I saw Hendrix. And I was like, oh, my God. You could see Hendrix, you know.
Great. Thanks for rubbing it in.
There'll be somebody you saw that you can rub in someday to a younger generation.
I wonder who that would be.
I don't know.
We'll see.
Well, didn't you meet Loretta Lynn?
I did.
Well, I would say that's a pretty good one to
rub in. Oh, yeah. Probably, for sure. Yeah. That'd be a good one.
Well, especially since you got to hang out with her.
Yeah. She's so nice.
She seems super cool.
She's just who she is, you know? Kentucky. She's who she is, and that's it.
Right.
And there's nothing more and nothing less, and that's what I like about her so much.
And she's innovative. I mean, all the stuff she did with Jack White.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think a lot of people kind of shut down when they get to a certain age, at least creatively.
Yeah.
And it's easy to kind of be in your comfort level, right, in your comfort spot. But she took her. I mean, they're very different people, but it really worked.
Yeah. When I did meet them, her son was there, and I couldn't understand a word he said. Like, I'm from the South, but I didn't know what he was saying. I was like, is this English? But I felt the same way in Ireland. I was like, I can't understand anything y'all are saying.
Where'd you go in Ireland?
We did the whole island. We went for our honeymoon. My husband and
I did. Are you Irish?
I mean, like a quarter, but the rest of me is English. So, yeah, it's enough. I mean, it's enough for them to go, come on in. You know, they don't care. If you're from America, they just welcome you. But yeah, I couldn't understand anything.
That's funny.
A little outcasted, but it's fine. It's fine.
And is your husband Irish too?
You know,
or was he just a good sport and he just said, okay, we can go
there? He's a good sport. His ancestry is fully English. And I have enough of it in there that I'm like, I don't want to trace these back that far. I don't want to know, you know? But yeah, he was a good sport. I tried to fit in, like bought the Doc Martens and wore the wool hats and stuff. And he's with sneakers with the jeans and the ball cap. And so
are you from a mile away. Do you like a pint, or did you get to do that? Do you enjoy a good Guinness, or?
Oh my gosh. Guinness is a meal.
Right.
And I love Guinness. I don't really drink, but we had Guinness over there where they make it, and it was fabulous. But you come over here and you have it, and something happens when they ship it over.
Pour it. which I don't know why I'm making a physical motion because this is a podcast and nobody will see it, but there's something about how they pour it. There's a certain way they do it.
So. Oh, it was just fabulous. Sorry, rabbit trail on that one. But, it was good.
I think it's interesting because when you meet musicians and see them on stage, I think most people are going to want to talk, and we'll talk about music too, but I think it's really interesting to know what a person is and what do you like.
Yeah. Oh, people are really interesting aside from what they do. Like a job is your job, but who are you as a human?
Yeah. So I had, I don't know if you know Emma Jo. I had Emma Jo on. She's here in town and she's like a paleontologist. It's her like day job. And she was like, right. And so she talked about, well, it's boring. I said, no, I found that fascinating. I think that's really cool. So
that's amazing.
Isn't that cool?
Teach me, make me smarter.
Right.
Yeah.
That's funny. Well, I think it's cool too. So, one of your big hits is this song about your church is a bar.
Mm-hmm.
So like I said, my family was from Texas and how'd you get away with that?
To get away with it?
Well, cause people take that. I mean, church, you know, they always say never talk about politics or religion. Mm-hmm. Like that's like the
and
big,
I don't.
Right.
I do, but I skirt around it very vaguely. I've learned how to maneuver that.
So let's talk about the process of writing that. So what was the impetus for that?
I go to church in a bar. I have for about the last 5 years. Carl Butler's Gospel Lounge. Actually, Rolling Stone just did a piece on Knuckleheads, and they talked about Carl Butler's Gospel Lounge, and he's my guitar player. He does run a church, a small church up in Gladstone, and I go there on Sunday afternoons. But he does a week service at Knuckleheads back there in the lounge. And I've been going, and one day he just thanked everybody for coming to church in a bar. And I said, well, I'm a thief. I'm stealing that. And I went home and I wrote the song. And we were in the middle of cutting this record in Nashville. And I sent it to the producer. And he said, hey, man, you need to know that by Monday. Because that's the first thing we're going to put out. And I thought this really straddles the line of both of those sides. And so I think it describes me pretty well. Because I'm really not interested in attacking anybody.
Right.
I'm interested in loving people and understanding who they are and what they bring to the table. You know, what's your life like? And that's what I like about going to church in that bar is you meet people, you know, and Carl's he's a good guy. And it was also, we kind of tell the joke that I tend to write songs after people pass, like many songwriters do.
Mm-hmm.
And I told you, well, you know, you're gonna pass someday, and I'll just go ahead and write yours for you, you know.
Did he want a residual out of it?
No, he would never. And it's a morbid joke, but
we all gotta go sometime.
Man, we just rag on each other on stage, like it's
no,
pretty
that's
bad.
Good. Well, I think I loved it.
Thank you.
I like whimsy. Like I like a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like. And I don't get political on here, but man, I just feel like the last 14, 15 months, people got awfully mean and awfully, you know, like
everyone.
Yeah. And just that hot take. And like, I just God, take a breath. Right.
Yeah. You probably don't hate your neighbor and they probably don't hate you.
Right?
They don't have time to hate you, honestly.
So that's what I was thinking. So obviously you're literally doing a church in a bar where I think if somebody heard that on the radio and they'd be like, oh, she just likes to go drink, which,
no,
you know, but you have to pay attention.
That's not what it's about.
But you have to pay attention to the lyrics.
Yes.
So I was like, did anybody like not get it?
Most people. If you listen to the words, it's actually, and no one's asked me about this yet. It's actually really a call out to that urban sprawl, prosperity gospel, mega church that brings people in and takes their money and offers them nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what I'm talking about. But there's so people don't, I'm not sure everybody pays attention lyrically to what I'm saying, which is okay. I mean, it does appear whimsical at surface listen, but no, I was definitely making a point because Carl doesn't do that.
Right.
And he was one of the first, I've been to a lot of churches and being from the South growing up in the church, been to a lot of churches. And when I found that one, I mean, I sat for a long time and watched that guy and I was like, are you authentic or are you fake?
Right.
Cause I want to know if you're screwing me over here. Like I want to know. And finally got into it and just, I was following him around and watching the stuff that he was doing. Cause I want the truth. Like that's really what I want. And it's part of the reason I write songs, but yeah, them and that small group of people showed themselves to be authentic. And I thought, yeah, I'm going to go to church in a bar because this is where I see Jesus.
Yeah.
Ironically enough, you know?
Well, I think it's one of those things that, I can't think of a bigger blasphemy than taking advantage of somebody who doesn't have money to begin with.
Absolutely.
Right? My little grandma in Takema, Nebraska, she didn't have, you know, $2 to put together. Yeah. That was just what they grew up with. I think she had to quit school in fourth grade because, you know, her dad died and she had to take care of the family.
Yeah.
And she would send money into these televangelists. And it's like, and my dad would try to be nice about it. But it's like, Mom, you don't have the money to do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what it's supposed to be about.
No. And I that song came out of really watching somebody give instead of take in. And there, I don't necessarily, and we don't have to go too far into this particular
topic.
As much
topic. As you want. We can drop it or keep going.
There was so much that's behind that song lyrically, if you listen to it. And I don't care for preying on the goodwill of people, because I think most people have good intentions, and I don't like seeing that preyed on, you know. And
no,
I don't. That's kind of, it's about quite a few things, the underlying message, but
no,
it's not actually a drinking song.
Exactly. That's why I wanted to ask about it.
Yeah, it's not a drinking song.
No, see, I did my homework.
Yeah, you did first.
Well, you know, it's like I said, it's such a thing. I was raised Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same sort of thing. Like, there's just these like third rail things that you just don't want to, you know, touch with anything, because it's just people get so defensive so
they
quickly.
Do. Yeah.
Right. And and another point to that, too, is I think most people are good people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of good people, they aren't the ones shouting from the mountaintop or the rooftop or the TV screen. Like, they just do the right thing and they keep
absolutely
their mouth shut, right?
That's what I found. And that's another thing that inspired this particular song is watching the things that this small church did that nobody knows about.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't say, because I don't think they want me to. So it came from the purest place in my heart. You know, I wasn't trying to make fun of anything.
No,
or anything like that. But yeah.
Well, that's why I do this podcast, because I'm always what the creative process is, mm-hmm, and what's the impetus and what's behind it. And
yeah,
it's, and you know, with songwriters, and I don't write songs because I'm not good at it. And I know it's a crap that you have to work at it. Nobody writes a hit right off the bat.
Oh, but, no.
Right.
Takes forever to learn how to do that.
But some people that I've talked to, like, they write. So I just had the guy on from Everclear. I don't know if you live.
Mm-hmm.
So, right?
Yeah.
Art. And Art, like, he, everything that's happened in his life, man, he puts it to a song.
Mm-hmm.
His dad, you know, father of mine, that song, you know, that's all about his dad abandoning them when they're 5 years old,
such
right?
A good song.
And his new song, he has multiple sclerosis. And so his song is all about, I mean, there's a line in the song. It's like, I leave the doctor's office. I smile at people that see me. I get to my wife and I break down crying, kind of thing. So like, it's interesting how some songwriters, like, they want to put it all in there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's free. And then there's other ones just like, it's open to your interpretation.
Yeah.
Do you fall on either side? I mean,
I'm very literal.
Okay.
I say what I mean. I'm unable to make metaphors out of lyrics. That's not, I love plenty of people who do. It's not my strong suit. I just have always been very upfront and very literal. I don't know how to be any other way. And sometimes the lyric is, yikes, you know. But I've found people have said, just do what you do, man. Don't try to do something else. So, yeah, I definitely fall on the more literal, right-in-your-face kind of lyricism.
Well, I think as long as it's authentic, that's what you want.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and I think it's a struggle to even know what that means. Because I've just now gotten to a point where I've learned how to lean into who I actually am instead of trying to be everything everybody else wants me to.
Right.
And that sounds cliche, but when you learn how to do that, something happens.
Mm-hmm.
And people tend to take notice. And
right.
Yeah.
Well, how is it to, because you've done well. Like, you've got people following
you.
Like, it's growing. It's doing mm-hmm. well, too. Does there come a point, and I'm just a schmo who's played in cover bands, so I'll never have this issue.
You're not a schmo.
That's what I tell everybody, I'm a schmo. Like, who do you trust, right? Like, is somebody really interested in you, Sarah, because they're interested in you as a person, or are they just interested in you because there's something that they feel that they're fame adjacent, for lack of a better term, because they see, you know, I've seen that happen with people that I know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How do you process that?
Well, keeping Carl around has been one of those things. He's been in the industry and toured for a very long time, you know, from the 70s on up. And when he kind of came on board, he started teaching me how to recognize certain things. And now I'm at the point where when I shake your hand, I can pretty much tell what you're interested in. Mm-hmm. I know. And I trust very few people, like maybe three.
Right.
You know, at this point. Because I've been burned by people, been burned by helping people. You're burned by friends. And they don't even intend to do it sometimes. Mm-hmm. They don't even mean to. And so I just, you can tell at this, I can tell at this point, but I also try to look at people who I determine would want to be around or involved for the wrong reasons and just view them with compassion and grace. Because a lot of times people are just trying to work their way up as well. Mm-hmm. They don't intend to use you. And I'm just like, I don't intend to use anybody. And that's one of the things for me, that when there are people around me helping me and investing in me and what I'm doing, I'm constantly asking myself, you know, why are you involved with this person? What's going on with you? What's your motivation? You know, so I don't know. I think a lot of times our own motivation, we reflect in other people. Mm-hmm. So I try not to question everybody's motives all the time. I'm rambling now. But...
No, that's good. Well, it's just interesting. So I'll give you a perfect example.
Sure.
So you're probably too young. You remember the band Saigon Kick at all?
Mm-mm.
So Saigon Kick was a big band in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
I'm old, Sarah.
No, you're not old.
So I had Chris McLernan on. Chris McLernan was bass player for Saigon Kick. He's mm-hmm. a super nice guy. He's also Irish, McLernan.
Mm. Yeah.
And typical Irish.
Morgan.
Man. Yeah, right? Tons of personality, just super cool. And so he was on right after Eddie Van Halen died.
Mm.
And so he told these amazing Eddie Van Halen, because he hung out with Eddie Van Halen. And I said to Chris, because he said something, he goes, he was so nice. I said, Chris, I'm sure part of it was Eddie knew that you didn't want anything from him.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't going to try to like get a guitar or have him sign something or take your picture. Like, it wasn't about that you were a fellow musician. You were just wanting to hang out. Like, they went bowling together, which is hilarious to think about. You know, Eddie Van Halen, one of the most, you know, especially then, like the biggest rock and roll guitar player on the planet, you know, in the bowling alley.
Yeah, I would. Why are you throwing a 14-pound ball with your hands that are worth millions of dollars? Like, why would you do that?
Yeah. But I think it's
funny.
It's interesting because then I said, that's why he was cool with you.
Absolutely.
He knew you weren't going to bug him.
Yeah, I have plenty of friends who are musicians. Well, when I say plenty, I mean like three. But some of the friends that I have that I've had the longest don't care anything about this.
Right.
And that's what I enjoy. I like relationships where this is not the primary factor.
Yeah.
And nobody cares about anything about writing songs or whatever. They don't care.
Uh-huh.
You know? And that's I don't know. You find people who care about you as a human being rather mm-hmm. than a human doing. And that's what I like in relationships. I mean, who am I without a guitar? Because that's what really matters.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
IMO. Maybe that's not true for everyone, but that's my opinion.
Well, let's be a little lighter then.
Yeah.
So I've asked a few people this because I think it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just say, and you may not have vinyl, so maybe it's, I know, MP3 or whatever, but my wife and I are coming over to your house for mm-hmm. dinner, and you're going to play us five albums that you, don't mm-hmm. have to be five albums that inspired you, but just five albums that you love. What are you picking for us?
That I love?
Just that you love. Like, you're like, man.
Over the last couple of years, I'll just go with that. Oh my gosh, this is hard.
I know.
This is really hard.
Well, I didn't ask you. I've asked musicians, what's your like two favorite songs? And they always are like, you're asking me to pick between my children. So I don't ask that question anymore.
Yeah. So one of my favorite records of all time, obviously the Boston debut record I'm going to pull out.
Which is amazing. Nobody would ever guess that.
Why? It's so good.
Is it the harmonies?
It's everything it's about it.
Well, the production was amazing.
The production. And it's the fact that if you know the stories behind Tom,
right.
You know, I say his first name like we're on a first name basis.
Because right.
I want to be on a first name basis. If you know his story about him just like flipping the bird to the record labels and cutting it himself, going to MIT and building all of the stuff that he played through, like, I think he calls them those space pedals for all those sounds. And the fact that he wrote everything on that record, I find that amazing. And,
Brad Delp's voice.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, I rip him off so much on some of the bigger tunes that I have. I can find the exact runs that I rip off from that record all the time. It's a good person to rip off, though, in my opinion.
He had a great voice.
I just think I love that band. I love them. And every time I listen to that record, I hear something new. Every time. Because he added, there's so much nuance to it. But I would definitely pull out that one. I would probably pull out Third Eye Blind's self-titled record too. The whole thing is just...
Well, I'm a 90s fan, so you're talking my language.
It's perfect. It's perfect. From Graduate to The Background. I mean, the record is beautiful. And I wish I could ask what they wrote that about. It's fairly obvious if you listen to the lyrics, but I am so curious as to the story behind the actual songs. I just think that whole record is really good. Willie Nelson's Phases and Stages, probably.
Oh, yeah. My mom loves
it's
Willie
a we- it's weird.
She
it's weird.
Loves Willie.
And I think that it's just it's an interesting concept. So I might pull that one out.
It's tough to only pick five. In some
yeah,
ways,
it's
right?
really, really hard. This isn't a full-on album, but the Elton John, his whole catalog, and just pull that out. The Princess Diana, Candle in the Wind. I would put, because that had that song, and it had Something About the Way You Look Tonight on the back of it, which that was my first dance at my wedding was that song. There's a reason.
That's fine.
So that's not an album, but I would pull that out. And I'm trying to think of what else I would pull out. I don't know.
See, this is fun because it makes you think. Like
what... It does. Well, it makes me think also about what I have. And I'm thinking about my vinyl collection right now is actually what I'm thinking about. That's what I'm
thinking
about. I've
had some people like, I don't have any vinyl. I'm like, okay, does it have to be vinyl?
We have boxes of that stuff. No. And everywhere I go, I look for that Boston record. I don't care if I have 30 copies. I want them all.
So let's talk. There's a couple. I want to talk about these albums. Oh, we only did four. What's your fifth? And
I'll my back. Fifth. Because I just pulled it out to listen to this week, Desperado. That's what we'll say.
The Eagles, Desperado.
Yeah.
Not Linda Ronstadt.
No, the Eagles.
Okay.
Yeah.
So part of the thing with Boston, it's interesting. So we are in an era, and you probably, I don't know how old you are, but I'm guessing that it's always been like the Pro Tools world for when you first walked into a recording studio.
Yeah.
Right?
Pretty much.
So they probably recorded that on 16 tracks on physical tape.
In
the
basement, I think. That is house.
Right? So that's part of it too, is that there's such, as a musician who's been in a recording studio, and you know that when you only have so many takes that you can do before the actual physical tape's
going to
start
it.
Wearing it out.
Yep.
Like, you better have your crap together. Like, you better be. So, I mean, I'm always impressed with the fact the Beatles did their first album in a day.
Yeah.
That's why John's voice is so broached at the end on Twist and Shout. That's why they've been singing for 10 hours. Like, voice was just gone by that point. But it sounds cool.
Yeah, it does.
Right? So that's interesting. Yeah. And then what, you know, kind of Willie's thing. What kind of what we touched on before with Loretta, he always kind of did like he would do. He wasn't going to just be a static person. I mean, he did a thing with Marcellus. They did a duo album.
Yeah,
together. And you wouldn't think like jazz trumpeter and Willie.
It would work if you. Yeah.
Good musicians are good musicians, but that's just kind of like, you know, when you like make a cake and you're like, oh, I'm going to throw in, I don't know. An avocado.
Yeah.
An avocado's great.
Yeah.
But does it go in a cake?
No. I don't know. It depends on what your diet is.
Right?
I don't know.
So, your guitar playing, how old were you picked it up?
I was probably 16. I had dated a guy who showed me a D chord, and I thought, this is fun.
Right.
So I just kept going. And my brother had one in his room, and I used to go steal it when he wasn't at home.
That's a very familiar. How many? You were from a big family, correct?
Yeah, there's 8 kids.
Jesus. We had 4, and I felt like... Because I have 3 older sisters. My joke always was I didn't see the phone or the bathroom until I was like 15 years old, because they were always occupied, right?
Yep. No, I get that. If you wanted a piece of pizza in our house when the pizza guy got there, you better fend for yourself.
Right.
Because you are not getting one.
How many brothers, how many sisters? What's the breakout?
4. Four.
And where are you in that?
Oh, this is a complicated answer. So it's a blended family. And when I was 17, my older stepbrother passed in a car wreck.
Oh, I'm sorry to
So
hear that.
I'm the oldest of the 5 with my parents. technically the second oldest with the blended family, but we were close in age, so we kind of were the leaders of the pack.
Right.
So I'm an oldest child.
Right.
Yeah.
Which usually are, and I'm not, I'm the youngest.
Yeah.
The oldest are always like the hyper organized. That's what the thing, mm-hmm. right?
In what way?
Well, I mean,
because I'm a slob.
Well, you can be a slob. I think so. My sister Monica, who I love dearly, and we are very close now. But I call her Lucy because mm-hmm. I'm Linus. Like Lucy still likes to boss me around. I mean, I'm 53 years old, right? But I'm still always just the little kid brother in mm-hmm. her mind, right?
So yeah, it doesn't change,
right?
It really doesn't.
Yeah.
No, we have. So there was a group of us that were a little older, and then there was a big gap, and then there were four more that were young, significantly younger than those of us at the top. And we still call them the little kids.
Right.
I mean, they're all, you know.
How old?
20 and older now. And right? But they're still the little kids. So, like, are the little kids coming? Like, what? They have right? children and you don't.
Yeah. No, but in your mind, that's how it always is.
Yes, it's sweet. I like it. They might not, but
yeah.
And I'm first, so whatever.
Oh, well, there you go.
I
so
win.
The guitar playing, you were big on finger picking. I watched some of your
that's
stuff.
That's my thing. I mean, I figured out how to do it. I was looking around at people playing the guitar. Everybody was strumming. I was like, that's cool. But I people like James Taylor picked a lot.
Yeah.
And I listened to him play early on when I started really getting into writing songs. I don't know a whole lot about him. I know the hits and all that kind of stuff, but listening to him play, he had these kind of picking things that he would do, and I thought those were interesting. Mm-hmm. I thought maybe if I learned how to do something like that, I could be a little bit different in my writing. And it opened up a lot for songwriting, being able to pick and play bass notes, you know, and it's, I don't know. I enjoy playing like that, and it's one of the strengths performance wise that I have that we've kind of started to frame mm-hmm. my music around.
Yeah, I mean, so let's talk about that. So I've played guitar mm-hmm. forever, and it's always the guitar styles are always interesting to me. So like James Taylor, Fire and Rain, the beginning mm-hmm. chords of Fire and Rain, by doing that, finger picking it, arpeggiating.
Yeah.
It gives it a whole different feel.
It does. I like being able to do that because you can throw strumming in there too. You can also build a song alone. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you don't have, well, I shouldn't say you, I just mean me. If I didn't have the ability to build a song alone when I don't have a band, how, you know, where does that roller coaster come from when you're trying to build up a show? I view songs very similar to how I view a show experience. Like, mm-hmm. each song I want to be like that. And so I incorporated stuff like that to try and, okay, I can pick the first verse, I can add a bass note in the chorus, strum through the bridge, break it back down, and it just gives me the ability to have dynamics that I wouldn't otherwise have.
No, I think that's absolutely true. And I it's interesting what you were talking about that. I was thinking like, okay, Joni Mitchell.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Gordon Lightfoot.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Simon early on when it was him and Garfunkel, like he did all, right, like that's and it adds all that. I mean, she's hugging herself.
I can't see. Such good stuff.
But you know what I'm saying, and it's almost like you know Lindsey Buckingham is still out there, and he's phenomenal finger picker too. But it's something that I don't think singer songwriters do it that much anymore. Mm-hmm. Like you said, like a lot of singer, they just like you said, your D chord, and they just strum and stuff. But it really adds texture. And color,
mm-hmm.
right?
Well, it adds color and it adds a performance factor to what you're doing. As a songwriter, I only have so many things to work with if I'm alone on a stage. If I get 3.5 minutes, you never know who's sitting there, and this whole package better be real good. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that's something, I'm not saying it is or it isn't. That's not necessarily for me to decide. I just do a particular thing. But I try for that particular thing to be as strong as it can be. I want, if I'm going to be in front of people and they're going to spend time listening to me, I want to be as entertaining and as good at my particular craft as I can be. And dynamics is a huge deal for me.
God, isn't it, though?
It's just a big deal. I like watching somebody who takes me somewhere if I'm going to watch somebody. And so I just try to do the things that I like to see.
Yeah. And it makes sense. And it's back to what we talked about, your authentic self. So
I hope.
Yeah. So it's nice to meet you in person.
Yeah.
And I could talk, I could geek out with you forever, but you have to go and go play. So let's talk about some of these gigs that are coming up. Mm-hmm. So you're playing, I looked at your calendar, like you're playing quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So where can folks, so this will go up a week from tomorrow.
Yeah.
So that would be June 26th. Where can people see you in late June and into July?
Late June and July. I'm scheduling radio right now because we just put this record out. And yep. So I'm in the middle of, I'll play a gig and then go radio and then come back home, repack, and then go out and do that again.
Right.
So there's going to be multiple stations, honestly, if I can't look at, if I don't have my calendar right in front of me.
And I have show
you.
Notes, Sarah.
Yeah.
So I'll put all this in the show notes so people...
I can't even tell you. I'm going to be up in Storm Lake, Iowa, up at Ragbri, which I'm really looking forward to that. That's a big event. That
it's
should be a lot
there.
Of fun. And I love Iowa. It's beautiful.
Now, those are those lakes that are actually glacier lakes. They're not the muddy, gross lakes that are around here.
It's beautiful yeah. up there. Mm-hmm. Doing that, I'm going to be in Nashville on the 26th.
Okay.
For Backstage Nashville at Third and Lindsley. I'm really excited. I've been to Third and Lindsley plenty of times, but I've never... played anything at Third and Lindsley, so and it's around with people I don't have business being around. So hey, I'm really excited
put
to do
people
that.
Around you the better than you. That's one of the secrets in life, right?
That is my philosophy. If I'm not the worst person on stage, who knows how good I'm gonna sound. You know, I want people around me who are way better than
right.
I am. So because then if I screw up, we still gonna sound fine, you know?
Right. So the new album's out, right?
It is out.
So how's it going?
It's going really well. People are picking it up that have never picked up stuff from me before. You know, they're putting it in rotation. And when we're reaching out to them, they're responding to us. And I've never been to California. You know,
right.
I've been once, but I've never been for work,
right.
really. And there's multiple stations up the dial that are picking this stuff up and writing back and saying, yeah, it's in rotation. You know, that's different than we spun it once or twice. Putting it in the system and letting it run alongside all of those other people is something I haven't really experienced so far. So things are going really well. I'm a little overwhelmed. I don't really know what to do with it, or I don't have enough time in the day to try and get a hold of everybody.
Right.
So it's kind of me and one other person just... all day long.
Right. Well, I appreciate
yeah.
you coming all the way out here to
oh,
see me.
Oh, yeah. No, thank you for having me. This is fascinating. People who like to have this kind of conversation about it.
Well, I just think it's what I'm generally curious about it.
Yeah.
And I think that whether it's authenticity when you write a song or if it's authenticity with me interviewing people, mm-hmm. like it's something I'm really... very much interested in, and I want to have it be a conversation, and I want it to be something we can go back and forth, because if I'm faking it, and you probably, since you've been doing all these radio interviews and stuff, like I hate when people, like I don't write questions out, because I actually listen to what people say,
mm-hmm.
and then I will feed off of that.
Yeah.
And I hate, and it's a lot of times in sports, I'll be like, why are they talking about, like, you know, the guy did the beforehand, and like he'll be like talking about a great pitcher he is, like a baseball. And the guy's like giving up 7 hits and 3 runs, but he had worked on that before, right? So he's just gonna put it out there. He doesn't care.
Yeah.
And I feel that way with people that interview music interviewers.
Yeah.
I just don't like when people ask the dumb question. I'm like, Paul McCartney does not need to be asked about John Lennon.
No.
Ever again. He's
no.
answered that question in any form and fashion that you can think
yeah.
of. It. And that's what I'm so anyway.
Yeah.
There's my rant. I went on my
You can rant all day. I don't mind.
But that's
it's
what
fine.
I'm saying. So that's why I love having people in and
yeah.
on, because I'm really fascinated by the craft, and I certainly think that you're very talented.
Thank you.
It's a joy to get to have you here and get to talk to you.
Yeah,
so
I mean, thanks for having me in. This is a pleasure to do. I like having conversations. There's so few of them, so
right.
few legitimate conversations. So.
All right. So I will put in the show notes how to buy the album. What's
yeah.
the different ways that you can have it? What all... Is it just CDs, just MP3s? How are you putting it up there?
It's we're selling CDs. They're sarahmorganmusic.com. It is on the website. And I'm always an advocate for the website, because then some big corporate conglomerate's not taking money from me. But
totally.
And you can download it on everywhere, iTunes, Spotify, all that good stuff. It's there. But yeah, the website is... a good one for me personally.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you have a great day.
Yeah,
and
you too.
And nice to meet you, and
you
have a safe trip.
I will do my best.
All right.
Take some polishing and a little time. I've
Sarah Morgan, everybody. It's such a great chat. Thanks so much, Sarah, for coming over to the house. And yes, the new album is out wherever. And yes, if you can, buy it straight from her website. That way she doesn't have to share it with other people. And you know what I'm going to tell you. It's in the show notes. Her website. You don't even have to look it up. Just click on it. So that's it for this time with Sarah. Hey, next time, we're staying in Kansas City. There is this amazing pianist. He plays piano. He is a music producer. He does beats. He's just like a freak of nature in a really good way, and he's a good dude. I've had the pleasure. He actually recorded something for me once, and it was fabulous. So Desmond Mason's my guest next time. That's going to be 1 week from today. So go out, support live music, and we'll talk real soon. Bye-bye.
Stone world.